Last week, I taught you how your attachment style affects your personal relationships. Well, today we're applying all those same principles to show how your attachment style affects your work life. After all, your work environment is all about relationships too. Today, you'll learn not only the things you need to watch out for given your particular style, but also the strengths you bring. Yes, we've all got them. And my top tips for managing your particular attachment style at work so you can be happier and more productive. So stay tuned.
I'm Dr. Abby Metcalf, and I'm a psychologist, number one Amazon best-selling author, TEDx speaker, and all-around relationship maven. With over 30 years of experience helping people create connection, joy, and ease in all their relationships. What's my secret? Well, besides being totally hilarious, I help you think differently so you can approach your relationships in a completely new way. I'm the best deal in town because the tools I teach apply to all your relationships, which allows you to simplify your life and find the confidence, calm, and deep love you've been craving. Combining my hands-on experience and all the latest research, I've created actionable tips and tools you can apply quickly and easily to create lasting change in all your relationships today. So let's get to it.
Welcome back to the podcast. Hello, I am your host, Dr. Abby Metcalf. I think you know that by now. If you're watching on YouTube, my office just gets emptier and emptier. I really need to buy new furniture and I haven't yet. So it's actually a little echoey in here and I'm sure my wonderful sound person is going to take care of that on the other side when he edits so that you don't notice that. But yeah, I sent all my furniture away with my son to college from my office because I thought I should get new furniture, not a teenager. But I haven't really coordinated that very well. I need to get it together. So soon. And I forgot jewelry today. I love jewelry. Anybody who knows me knows I'm a bit of a fashion gal. So I feel kind of naked. Does anybody else have that, women, when you forget your jewelry? You feel kind of naked? Maybe men. I shouldn't be sexist about it. Okay, so, and if you know, you haven't yet, I really love the reviews when you leave them. Thank you. I love reading the reviews. If you don't have something nice to say, don't say anything. But if you have something nice to say, no. You know, I always say leave an honest review at least so that you can let people know if this is a good podcast for them or not. But obviously, I really appreciate a great review. And it really helps people find me and all the good things. And you can rate it on Spotify. You can leave a review on Apple, what I still call iTunes, or whatever the name is of it now. I don't even know. I'm old. Leave me alone. I don't know the names of things. And if you haven't yet, you know, give me a follow on Instagram. I'm even on TikTok. Who would have thought? And Facebook, you know, I'm in all the places. So you can always check out the website. All right. So let's talk about attachment styles at work. Again, last week I went deep on a lot of this. So we're going to do a little brief thing and we're going to jump right in and get to the pros and the cons and the tips. So get ready. So, you know, attachment styles, as we already talked about in the last, and obviously I'll link to last week's podcast, you know, been around since the 50s, and this is the work of Bowlby and Mary Ainsworth, but researching them more, researching how it affects you at work is a more recent phenomenon. And I from what I could find, really it was really in 1990, there were these Cindy Hazan and Philip Shaver were one of the first research teams to apply attachment theory to how we act and manage our relationships in the workplace. And since about 2015, the research has really taken off. So it was a little slow there from 90 on, but it started to really pick up momentum. There's actually been more studies published in the last about 8 years than in the previous 25 years combined. So the good news is we're having a lot of really great research happening about attachment styles at work. The, I guess, less good news is that there's not as much of it. You know, there just isn't. It's not as broad and deep as the original research on that continues on attachment styles. However, as always, I will link to the research that I found that I thought was reputable and really solid and great on, you know, come over to the website, abbymedcalf.com, and you can, there's always a corresponding blog under research, under tips and tools, relationship tips and tools, and you can go there and do it, or the podcast page, you know, the show notes. And yes, I repeat this because there's new people listening every week. For anybody who writes in and goes, why do you repeat that stuff every week? Well, I repeat it and I appreciate you being here. It means a lot to me you come every week, but we have to have the love for new people coming on. So please be patient. I don't spend a lot of time talking about this stuff, but I always throw it in because new people are always listening, which I appreciate you if you're new too. Hello. Welcome to the love that is Abby Medcalf, giving you something close to free therapy, I hope, for everybody. Okay. So not so shockingly, I think the research has consistently shown that how you attach in your personal relationships directly relates to how you attach in your work relationships. Ta-da! Yes, they're highly correlated. Yes, these things go together. So again, I went deep into how your attachment style affects your personal relationships in the last episode. So I'm not going to repeat that all here. I just want to quickly remind you of a few things. One is that attachment is the emotional bond you develop with another person, and it reflects really the trust and security that you feel in that relationship. There are two main categories of attachment styles from attachment theory, and those are secure and insecure. The secure category is just secure, but the insecure category is then subdivided into a few different styles. And today I'll be reviewing, I'm just going to divide them down like I did in my way back initial episode I did on attachment styles, way back in the first season of the Relationships Made Easy broadcast. Crazy. Where I'm just breaking it down to anxious and avoidant insecure attachment styles. There's also something called disorganized, which is a combination of the two, but I'm not really going to go into that today. I don't think there's a big reason to. You're going to find yourself in one of these categories. Okay. So I also want to say that although we all are predominantly one attachment style, right? We just are. But it can vary depending on a particular person or situation, okay? So, you know, if you're taking on your first project at work in a managerial role, you might normally be a very securely attached person, but now you're showing a lot of anxious attachment style with this, right? Maybe you've got that boss that reminds you of your mom or your dad, so you find yourself more avoidant. I know you work through a lot of that in therapy, but it just creeps back in every now and then. I don't think that's just me. So, you know, I just want to say that. So for me, and I'm always outing myself, I am at my heart of hearts an avoidantly attached person. I have done many, many rehabs. I've gone to tons of drug rehabs. I've walked on hot coals with Anthony Robbins. I've done EST. I've done LifeSpring. I've been in therapy off and on for 40 years. Maybe 40. I'm old. I've done a lot of work on myself and continue to. And so I really have a way more securely attached style today in my life overall. But I will tell you, when I'm up against it or when I get a little weird, I just was really sick. You could probably hear it in my voice a little bit. No COVID, thank God this time, but I did get sick. And I have to tell you, I'm so avoidant when I'm sick. I just like curl up in a ball. I don't want anybody to talk to me. I don't want you to ask how I am. I don't want anything. I want to avoid everybody. I wish everybody would just go away and I could be alone forever. That's what I know. Some of you are listening going, are you crazy? This is when I love people around me and I want them to bring me things. To me, I wouldn't mind if they could bring me something and like just literally just vaporize afterwards. That sounds terrible. I'm just being honest. Like I don't even want to have to say thank you. I just assume crawl to the kitchen myself for tea and make tea, then have someone bring it to me. It's just how I'm built. So in certain situations I can go back there, but the rest of the time I like to think I'm secure. So I just want to say that as you're listening, but I also don't want you to be in denial of your attachment style, because people like to do that. They like to think, well, I'm everything. I'm just a little over here and there. You probably have one thing predominantly. And the vast majority of people in the world are more securely attached, believe it or not, at least from the research. I find that hard to believe, frankly, but that's what the research says. I don't know. It's not the vast majority. It's a little over half. I think it's 56%, but don't quote me on that. I have it in the last episode. So let's jump in. So securely attached style. Now, so kids who developed this way, basically, I've said it before, they saw their primary caregiver as a safe base of operations. And from that safety zone, they could explore their world. You know, they felt confident and you guessed it, and secure. So they end up trusting others and they feel comfortable relying on other people that they're close to. They get close to people. It's a beautiful thing in the neighborhood. It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood if you're securely attached. So now, how does secure attachment style look at work? Well, as you might imagine, having a secure attachment style, I'm going to spend the least amount of time on this one because it's great. You know, having a secure attachment style benefits all of your relationships, and work is certainly no exception. The research shows that you're more likely, if you're securely attached, that you do your work well and you fully complete the tasks that are assigned to you. You create strong bonds with your fellow employees. You have more faith and trust in those who work with you and who you work for. You're just perfect out there with your securely a little attached style. No, I'm not going to hate on you. The research also shows that your coworkers, the people who work for you, your bosses, they see you as a valuable member of the team or the organization and someone they can trust. So I know it's great, right? And people with a secure attachment style overall, they just have higher job satisfaction. They have, they also, by the way, have less physical issues and less mental health issues, which means less sick days, less attrition, less turnover when you have a securely attached group of people. Now, like I said in the beginning, I'm going to give you pros, you know, to each type. So believe it or not, you don't just need securely attached people on a team. There's actually kind of good people for every job. That's the beauty of the differences in humans and all our diversity. So if you've got a secure attachment style, you probably show pretty good boundaries at work. You're comfortable saying no when it's needed. You're not so worried about, you know, failure or competing with your coworkers or other people. Likely if you're in this category, you're more confident. You manage your time well, again, mostly because of those lovely, healthy boundaries. You might even be that person who has the elusive work-life balance that might even be you. So obviously you want a securely attached person on your team. You want these people around because they're great. They're easygoing. They're confident. They help boost morale. Yeah, they're just the best, right? Oh my gosh. So if you identify as a securely attached person, I would actually say that the things you want to work on, or the tips I would give you, are to continue to stay very mindful, because you want to make sure that you are noticing things. I would say the only time I see this can get into some trouble is if you can kind of veer off into too easygoing or too go with the flow, like too okay with everything, that you don't notice those first ripples of trouble. Unlike who we're going to get to next, who is our anxiously attached, they notice it right away. But you might not notice things for a while. You might be, so if you're more mindful, you'll pick up on, let's say someone, there's a little tension with your boss. You're noticing it, right? But securely attached people might just dismiss it. Might kind of go, "Oh, she's having a bad day," or "It's been a really stressful week," or right, which is fine most of the time. But sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's the beginning of something else, and you don't nip it in the bud quickly enough, and then it gets sort of bigger, and it might, you know, get out of control really quickly. And so just if you're mindful, though, you can really pay attention. Like, no, this doesn't feel like regular stress. This feels like something else. You know, this doesn't feel like just a one-off. This feels like something else. Or, wow, yeah, oh yeah, now that I'm being mindful, now that I think about it, this has actually been happening a few days in a row. You know, that's what the being mindful will help you with. And who has a mindfulness starter kit for free on the website? Who? Abby does. Why? Because she loves you. That's right. There's nothing sleazy about it. I don't try to, you know, do anything with it. You do, by the way, whenever you download these things, you get put on my mailing list, which is a once a week email, my love letter. I don't know why you wouldn't want the love letter. I think you're crazy not to want the love letter. It's going to be the best thing in your inbox all week. That's what I hear. No, I spent a lot of time on it. It's because I love you. And it's really just meant to be inspiration and hope. So sign up. If you want to just sign up for it, by the way, you can just go to the website under love letter. You guessed it. And just put in your email. But otherwise, anytime you've downloaded something, you'll get on the list. And by the way, and you can unsubscribe. It's really okay. I don't notice. There's many thousands of people on the list. I don't notice if someone unsubscribes, number one. And number two, it's okay if you download multiple things, you're not going to get put on the list 20 times. That's not, you know, we're a little smarter than that. Okay. So I would say that if you're securely attached, work on your mindfulness so that you kind of stay really in what's real. Okay. But let's get to the things you're waiting for, which are those damn pesky, insecure attachment styles. Because you secure people, you know, we don't want to hate on you, but there you go. Now, again, there's only one secure attachment style. It's just secure attachment style. But again, these insecure are subdivided. And, you know, I've said before, depending on what research you're looking at, there's all kinds of, you know, there might be multiple styles, but I'm just doing these two for the sake of ease and clarity today. So we're just going to discuss those. Okay. I'm trying to think of how I want to approach. I'm going to start with anxious. I am going to start with anxious. Sorry. I know I had a little pause there because I wasn't sure. So again, the anxious attachment style, which is also known as anxious ambivalent or anxious preoccupied, if it's broken down more, this type tends to worry. But they mostly worry a lot about any kind of relationship they're in. They tend to be insecure about themselves. There's some low self-esteem involved, and they have like a need to be in relationships. They like to rely on others. They need to rely on others. Sometimes they're described as clingy or needy. If you're in this category, you likely analyze or overthink the meaning behind what others say and do. And these folks are usually pretty anxious and stressed about how they're perceived. So how does this show up at work? How does the anxious attachment style show up at work? Well, if you're anxiously attached, then you're likely bringing this worry, insecurity, the self-doubt to your work, of course, right? Makes sense. This means you might seek out constant, or maybe a better word is you seek out consistent sort of reassurance or approval from your boss, your coworkers, whoever. You're likely spending a lot of your time people-pleasing because you're trying to get everyone to like you. This often results in poor boundaries and poor time management. You know, poor time management that's just poor boundaries. That's synonymous, right? Because you take on too much because you're so afraid of saying no to anything. You're likely sort of consumed with this fear of at work. Like what do I see a lot? I see, fear of getting fired. There's always this fear of getting fired. Well, I can't draw a boundary because they'll fire me. I hear that all the time. I only from anxiously attached people. Securely attached people never say it. Even avoidant attached people never say it. If you're anxiously attached, that's one of the things you think about a lot. I'm going to get fired. I can't say no. I just can't. My boss will hate me. The things I hear. Even I've had clients who literally, I'm not even exaggerating, just had like this amazing performance evaluation. Amazing. You're the best thing that ever happened to this company. So I'll say to them, hey, this is a good time. You just came off this great thing. Why don't you start with saying no? Let's start with these boundaries. Let's do it. No. They'll fire me. You're only as good as your last day, not your last review. And I mean, the anxiety is it's real. The struggle's real. So there's also anxiety, fear running the show. Like I won't be able to move up the ladder. You know, others are going to outshine me. I won't be able to find a new job. No one else would hire me. I have a wonderful woman I work with who has been working at Google a long time. I love you, Google. I have some wonderful Google employees in my practice that I coach or do therapy with. And actually, I can think of this with a few of them. They literally have been afraid to leave Google because they feel like no one else will hire them. And are you kidding me? Like when you have Google on your resume, it's kind of like having, you know, Harvard or Columbia on your resume. You know, you've got these good things in your resume that people are going to see and likely want to have you on their team. So this idea, you know, it's so unfounded. It's just so not real. You know, you're by the way, so, and this is what the cutest part is, all of the, and I've had many, many, many clients who worked at Google, all of them are going to think this is them. So that's what's so funny right now. I'm going to get on the phone with some of them or on Zoom and they're going to say, were you talking about me in the podcast? I'm really only thinking of this one person. Anyway, so at work, if you're anxiously attached, you likely don't speak your mind because you don't want to rock the boat. And so you end up kind of going along and then you get angry, resentful, frustrated, paralyzed, just frozen, stuck. Later when you, because you've said yes to too much, you know, you said yes to too much work, or so when the project goes left or you're just going crazy because you could see it coming, but you didn't say anything, right? You saw the project going, you were like, oh, it's going to happen, but you didn't say anything. But now you're resentful to the other people, like they should have guessed somehow, or you should have said something, or you're knocking, you know, you're face palming, I should have said something. So, and one of the issues is that this kind of anxious style at work has likely worn out other people. Your boss, your colleagues, people who find you sort of demanding is the word I hear sometimes, because you have such high expectations of yourself, you ended up having them for others. You don't even realize it. And people don't like that. Or just the fact that you need this reassurance, you want to talk about things, you want to process, you want to keep going back. It makes you seem very demanding and judgmental, and it wears people out. It wears them out. And because you commit to too much, sometimes that means you don't get your work done on time, or it's not done as well as it could be. It means sometimes that other people are waiting for you to finish something so they can get it. And so they're getting annoyed with you and worn out by you, or you're asking them 50,000 questions before you complete your part because you want to do it perfectly and you don't want to rock the boat. And you don't want anybody mad at you. You know, it's like, they're just like, get her done, you know, and that creates problems. And I'm not saying that they don't like the excellent work you can sometimes do on the other side, but you could have gotten there much easier. You're excellent, you know, what you think is B work or C work is like A plus work. And that's kind of the problem. And then you expect everyone else to do that A plus, 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 plus work. And it's not achievable. You know, it's a hard thing to catch for other people and for yourself. And so again, other people can feel overwhelmed by your need for processing and reassurance. So they might distance themselves over time. Anxiously attached workers, you know, you can also exhibit, sometimes there's like an over-reliance on their supervisor and they need more management. You know, they want more input. They want more oversight. They want more of that. And that, again, like wears people out. It just ends up being a lot of work for them. So the other issue I see a lot is that anxiously attached employees, they find their job really stressful, like super duper stressful. And they end up with lower job satisfaction. They end up hating jobs that I don't think they have to hate. They have a much higher risk of burnout. And they end up sometimes with some behavioral issues at work because they do end up sort of rubbing people the wrong way, or because of this constant need for reassurance, et cetera, there's friction. They end up with friction. It's weird. In the good ways, they don't, but in the bad ways, they do. Or they're just trying to get back in like someone's good graces and they're acting kind of needy. And again, that creates some issues with other people feeling overburdened by them. Now, having said that, here's the reasons why you want an anxiously attached person on your team. Because believe it or not, there are pros to having an anxiously attached coworker or you being an anxiously attached worker. And I would say first and foremost, without a doubt, without anything else, is that anxiously attached people are highly sensitive to their environment. We sometimes use that word hypervigilant, but that means they'll be the first to notice problems. I think a perfect job for this person is often in something like risk assessment or quality assurance, like something like that. They're great there because, you know, they're the first to notice the disturbance in the force, you know. They're the first to notice if something is just a little bit awry. And again, yeah, it can make you crazy when they're noticing every little thing, but if they're in the right job, it's really good. And I would say the second pro is although their anxiety can result, again, in these like kind of anxious behaviors that drive other people nuts, they also want to be that person that goes along. They want to people please. So they can be someone on your team who never gives anyone any trouble. Again, it depends on the job. So, you know, what their role is in the team, but an anxiously attached person on a team can seem like a dream in some ways, again, depending on their role, because they don't want to cause tension with or friction or anything with any of their coworkers. They're just trying to get along. They just want to people please. So they can seem like a wonderful person to have on your team. And then the last thing I would say is that what I have found over the years is that anxiously attached people are pretty good with feedback, believe it or not. Right away, if you give them any kind of feedback, even a little, they're often like, oh my God, what happened? I'm so sorry. You know, it's like a little too much. But once you can work past that and you start to develop some trust with this person, their people pleasing means they're often being self-reflective. They often think of how what they do affects other people. So they tend to be, I have found, pretty open to self-improvement, to bettering their skills. You know, once you get past the anxiety of the feedback, they can really be great at people who want to be better. They can look at themselves, they can see their strengths, they see their limitations for sure. I hope, you know, if you can help them to see their strengths, it's a good thing. Along with that, I spend, you know, that's a lot of what I do is in therapy or if I'm coaching them or being a therapist, I really am working on them seeing both. But it's definitely there. And I would say it's there more than even securely attached people. I think that the anxiously attached are the best at being self-reflective, trying to improve on their skills, you know, trying to be better. Again, it might come from a fearful place, but it is certainly there, which is a cool thing. Okay. Yeah. I think those are my top three. Yeah. All right. So let's talk about, I said I was going to give you some tips and I am because I love you. So let's talk about how to be happier at work and improve your performance if you're anxiously attached. You know, I have some very specific tips for you. Number one, without a doubt, is to start each morning with meditation. I think you above all else, and I know anxious people tell me all the time, I can't sit still, I can't stop my mind. Yes, you can. Yes, you can. And it's the best thing you could do is meditation. For you, best thing you could do. What do I have? It's free. The free meditation starter kit. That's right. Because I love you. You guessed right. That's it. I have a free meditation starter kit. I also have a little course, learning to meditate for 15 minutes in just 15 days. Because really all you need is 15 minutes of meditation. So I have the little course. It's how I learn to meditate. It's my tried and true. It's what I use with all my clients. It's what I teach. 15 minutes in 15 days. I think it's $10 or $11 on the website. I think it's $11.11. I think I was cute. I think I made it $11.11 because I'm adorable like that. You know, the angel thing. I know I'm adorable. Go there. Start with the free one if you want. If you like it, I would get the little course. I think it's worth your time. But really, really, really doing or, you know, go back. I'll link to it in the show notes. I did a whole episode about, you know, recently on how to do the what I call the hour of power in the morning or the 10 minutes of power every morning, how to really get your morning started in the right direction. You have got to get ahead, you know, of your anxiety. So you've got to be driving your bus all day, and nothing's going to help you more than this. I'm just telling you right now, nothing. I almost shouldn't give you any more tips. This is the one that I really want you to do. It will pay off, and it'll pay off quickly. You'll see. In just a few months, you'll have a huge change. But please start meditating in the morning, not at the end of your day. You can do it again then if you want, but again, you only need 15 minutes, but start your day before you go to work. I really highly recommend it. And with you, it's all about learning to set healthy boundaries. So this includes things like not checking your emails 1,000 times a day, or the notifications, turning them off. You know, really for you more than anyone, you got to schedule specific times throughout the day to check, to deal with your emails. And every single anxious person I've ever had, it lets me know how impossible that is. And I can only tell you that I have people in your same job who aren't anxiously attached, and they figure it out. So it is not the job. No job is impossible to do this with. I know you think so. I love you so, so much. I love you. Please hear me. I love you. It's okay if you feel like you can't do this. I'm telling you, you can, but I totally understand if you feel like you can't. I just need you to see where it's from. It's from your anxiety. It's not from something outside yourself. Just be real about it. Keep doing it, but be real. The other thing around your boundaries is to learn how to say no and stick to it. Oh, did I do a whole episode called exactly that? How to say no and stick to it? Yes, I did. I'll link to it in the notes. But that's a priority. Also setting up, you know, again, with boundaries, is setting up a clear beginning and end to the workday. Really, really, really important. You got to have a beginning and you got to have an end, or it just goes on and on and on. Even if there's a break in there and you are so anxious that you decide, I'm going to check my emails again at 9 o'clock at night, I don't recommend that. But then at least I want you taken off at 5 and not checking anything again till 9. You know what I mean? Like, really give yourself a break. Really have a boundary around it. And last but not least, that I think is super duper important for you if you're in this category, is you've got to create a schedule and stick to it. And I mean a real schedule. Because what happens is you get your time management issues, again, with the boundaries, is that you get pulled away by perceived emergencies all day. You know, I think the number one thing I see is something like someone complains to you in some way, either that a customer, a coworker, you get some kind of complaint or some kind of tension, and that's it. Everything goes and you go all about that because you can't manage your anxiety about it. And again, if you start meditating, you will. But in the meantime, if you have a schedule, you will look at your schedule and you will say, okay, this person complained about this thing. It's not an emergency. It's important, but it's not an emergency. I'm here. Let me look at my schedule tomorrow or at the end of the day or wherever. And that's where I'm going to put it. And I'm going to stay on task. I'm going to stay on my thing. It's also really nice when something like that comes up in that you can tell someone, you know what, this is really important. This, whatever you said, I'm completely booked right now, but Thursday at 10, I have it in my schedule. I'm going to address this and I'll be getting back to you. People just need to know where the other side is. They don't owe it. Somebody might push back. Of course, everybody likes it right now, especially if they're used to that with you, especially if that's what you always do. What do I always say? If someone pushes back hard on a boundary you've drawn, then that boundary was needed even longer ago. That's the most important boundary you should be drawing. When someone's really upset by it, guess what? Yeah. So either way, though, you know, you're setting up expectation, and it reduces your anxiety when you know, I've told them Thursday, I'm going to handle it Thursday, I'm going to finish with the things I've scheduled to do now so that these all don't become emergencies, you know, right? I'm not dealing with 50 emergencies. And I can hear you now, anxious people, because I love you. You're saying, well, there's a lot of urgent things in my job, Abby. I do have to drop things. Uh-huh. So that means you need to work in more time in your job. You need to work in actual times when you have an hour that you know is going to be for the emergency things that come up. Do you see what I'm saying? You've got to, stop being a victim in your day. You just do. I don't accept it. You shouldn't accept it. It's a bunch of bullshit. You're not a victim, okay? You're just not. So I say with love, you know I love you, but you got to get some hard truth here. All this talk, if you're hearing yourself with everything I say that people say, then that's what's happening. You're setting yourself up as a victim, and you're not. So take some fucking control. Take a little control back. You don't have to do all this at once. Start with the emails a couple times, you know, setting it up for 3 times a day that you check it. Start with just having a definite end time to your work every day. Start somewhere. You don't have to start big, start small, but start. And most importantly, get out of the mindset, shift your belief system that you're a victim in your job, because you're not. Okay. You're a victim of your thoughts at this point. So let's change those thoughts. Okay. I really highly suggest that every evening you set up your schedule and priorities for the next day. It's really the best thing to do. And again, be realistic. Don't put in 50 phone calls in an hour. You're not going to do it. No one can do that. You know, you really have to think about what you really can do. And if you thought about it, you kind of know. If you've been at the job more than a minute, you know how long it takes to do crap. You know how long it takes to do a slide deck or answer phone calls or be in a meeting with your boss. You know how long it takes at this point. So freaking get realistic. This is not the time to be optimistic. This is the time to be pessimistic about your schedule and really give yourself more time. And then you lay out an hour by hour schedule of what you're going to do. I'm going to link to a video I did on this on the show notes page and on the blog in the relationship tips and tools. I did a little video on how to do this hour by hour thing. So that'll be there. So you can watch me chat about it. Another tip. I said the other one was last. I lied. You want to also speak to coworkers, supervisors, whoever, the second you perceive that something is off. Don't just stay in your head about it, because that creates a lot of problems for you. You do a lot of assuming. You don't want to rock the boat. You want to people please. I want you to speak directly to someone if you think there's tension or misunderstanding. Just say it. Like, hey, are we okay? I'm just checking. I felt some tension. I'm just checking. Are we okay? Did I do anything? Is there something I said? You know, just let me know. And just say it. And then you'll find out if you're crazy or not, you know, if something is really happening or not. So I want you to do that. Okay. I'm moving my hair. I'm going to have a little sip of tea. Hold on.
If you're anything like me, you're bad at asking for help, like weirdly bad at it. I've been a busy gal for a long time now. Kids, partner, my own business, all the things that make for a full life these days. And my instinct always was to just white knuckle it and do it all myself. But I say it on this show all the time. Ask for help. You don't have to do it all. And meanwhile, there I was doing it all. And I finally changed all that, from my podcast editor to the person who got 10 years of photos off my phone and into albums I actually look at. I found amazing people to help me on Upwork, and I've been using them for the last 8 years. And you don't need a business for any of this, any project, any size, planning an event, sorting out something at home, finally handling the thing on your list you keep avoiding. Upwork lets you find, hire, and pay expert freelancers all in one place. With Business Plus, you can access the top 1% of talent on Upwork, and with AI-powered shortlisting, you'll get matched to the right freelancer in under 6 hours. No endless searching required. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to connect with top talent ready to help you and your business grow. That's UPWORK.com, Upwork.com.
Mm-hmm. No, I don't edit it out. No, I didn't edit out my tea sip. I think you can handle it. Okay. I didn't think you were judging me. I was judging myself. All right. And I'm going to give another last tip. I know you're like, shut up, Abby. No, I am, because the avoidance right now are like, I want to hear about avoidant. I'm going to get there. 1 second. I want you to choose the type of work you do carefully. And this is for everybody, avoidance too. I think a lot of people get into jobs or environments that it doesn't work for them. It doesn't work for their type. And you end up thinking, well, I just have to be different, you know? And I'm not saying if you're anxiously or avoidantly attached, I don't want you to work on it. I do. But I also don't want you to torture yourself. Don't torture yourself. You know, for me, it being avoidantly attached, I'm not the best employee. I'm just not. I even in my secureness now and all that, I'm not a great employee. I'm an excellent consultant. I'm a really good entrepreneur. I'm an excellent self-employed person. I am excellent at starting my own businesses and things. Great at all that. Being an employee, not so much. And I've been it before and I'm not. I don't like what people are doing and I avoid it. I'll get into that when I talk about avoidance. But I really want you to think about the job you have. Like I mentioned earlier, like a job in sort of risk assessment. So let's say you become a lawyer and you're like, oh, here I am as a lawyer. And you're anxiously attached and it's not, you know, just, or think about the kind of law you do. Maybe you have to retrain. I don't know. Think about the kind of law firm you're in, or if you're in a firm at all, or if you are an entrepreneur, just think about, there's many, many ways to quote unquote skin the cat, right? There's many ways. Do we say that in Australia, skin the cat? I want to know from my Australian listeners. Do we? Because I got a lot of Australians. Or those of you in England or anywhere else. Is that just American skin the cat? It sounds horrible. I don't know where it's from. Anyway, there's many ways to do something. Many roads to Rome, we also say. So I really want you to get creative with the kind of job you have. And you can even, wherever you are, really talk to your boss and say, these are my strengths. If you've been there a while, there's often a way that they might want to keep you and get rid of some of the things you're not good at and add more of what you are good at, you know, and change the sort of job structure around a little bit. There, lots of things can happen if you ask. And I know you're anxious, so you don't want to ask, but it's really important that you're in an environment, you know, where you can be clear with your boundaries, where you can begin and end your day. You can decide better how projects are managed, all you know what I mean? And I would also say that just overall, I shared this a few weeks ago when I was complaining about someone not liking a talk I did, you know, Gary telling me, you know, not everybody likes the Beatles. What, shocking, yes, but it's true. So I say, I love you, anxiously attached people. Not everyone's going to like you. It doesn't matter how well you do it. It doesn't matter how perfectly you say it. It doesn't matter at all. Everyone's not going to love you. It just can't happen. People don't love me. Lots of people have tuned into the podcast for 1 minute and they were out because they decided they hated me. I know, shocking, shocking. But that's okay because there's other people for them. Just, it's all good. It's all good. It just gets hard to remember. So if you can keep that in mind and remember that not everyone's going to like you. All of, you know, whoever it is, all your coworkers are probably not going to like you. Just unless you have an office of three of your best friends, they're not even going to like you sometimes. You know what I mean? You got to let that part go. Okay. Let's get to avoidant. My avoidants aren't even listening anymore. They're like, I don't care. I didn't care about all these other people. I should have had you first so you could have just signed off the podcast because you don't really care about other people's styles. I say with love because I am one. All right. So again, the avoidant attachment style, also known as the dismissive avoidant or anxious avoidant. Again, this is an independent, seemingly confident and self-sufficient person. Again, kind of how they seem on the surface. And if you have this attachment style, you don't want to rely on other people, period. You want to be in control. If this is your style, for sure, you've likely been told you're distant or aloof in your relationships. And you don't always open up to others, especially not easily, especially when it comes to expressing your private thoughts or your emotions. You know, you just sort of, this isn't your wheelhouse. Understood. I stand in solidarity. Okay. So let's talk about an avoidant attachment style at work. If you're an avoidant type, you're not looking for a work family. I'll tell you that right now. You're not looking for a work family. You might be friendly with coworkers, but feel no need to turn those relationships into friendships inside or outside of work. Or maybe you have a little bit inside of work, but that's it. It stops at the door. You really prefer to be independent. You prefer to work on your own. So for you, when working from home became a thing, oh my gosh, you were so ecstatic. People thought it was just the introverts that were ecstatic. And avoidance can be extroverted or introverted. It was also the avoidants who were just like, this is the best. I love it. You know, it's so funny. In fact, you might have already found a way to work from home before the pandemic even happened. You might already have been doing it. Or you might have been on the road all the time, so you weren't stuck in an office situation. I know, you know, I was laughing because I had already been using Zoom for a long time when the pandemic hit. So for me, it was a very easy, I probably had 50% of my clients, maybe not 50, 40% of my clients via Zoom because I have a lot of international clients and across the United States and other countries, blah, blah, blah. So I was already doing Zoom. I was very comfortable. And I, since the pandemic, I'm not having people in my office anymore. See, here's my little avoidant coming through. I love a podcast, right? I'm over here. You're over there. But my secure is where you hear my love. I do love you so much. And I think that's what you really feel. I do want to attach. I do have a lot of securely attached relationships today in my life. But again, I notice when the little avoidant sneaks in there, it still can sneak in. It still can say hi. So I have strong relationships that I made from work and that I've taken outside of work. So again, the secure has happened and it's nice to know my work has paid off. But I do like to out myself when it sneaks in. Cause I also like to remind you that you're never going to be perfect. It's just none of us are, and it's okay. I try to laugh at myself when it comes up. I'm thinking, what is wrong with you, Abby? Like, my gosh, you preach this stuff. You've been in therapy forever. Friggin' move on, you know? But you know, it's kind of hard sometimes to undo things that have gotten hardwired since childhood. So, I just say that to remind you that we're all human and it's okay. All right. If you're avoidant, your main issue at work is likely, I'm going to say this, I've had it, is that you don't respect or have some negative thought processes when it comes to usually your boss or supervisor. It could be your coworkers too. It could even be the type of work done at your organization, but I'll see a lot of kind of thinking you're smarter than your boss at work. Again, when I was an employee, I had this problem a lot. Not as a consultant, it's so easy because you're kind of coming in and going out. I don't know. And again, I've done a lot of work on myself since I was an employee. So I just don't have that at all anymore. I really do just respect so much and I can listen well and get feedback and all the good things. But I remember way back just feeling like these people are idiots and I would cut corners. I would do things that I thought were right versus what the company told me to do or thought was right. I had a very hard time with that. And so I see that a lot in avoidance because we're distrusting of other people's judgment. So you're not trusting their approach. You might even think that people or things at work are beneath you. I say with love, you might think that. It's okay to say it out loud. All of this can lead to you being a problem for your supervisor. That's the issue. Like they can kind of pick up on the fact that you're not always doing what was asked of you to do or not time managing well or deciding what projects you think are more important that you enjoy more, that you think are more crucial. So you might decide that you know better and push the boundaries to make things work for you. Since these other people, you know, really don't know what they're doing. So again, I say with love, you probably might not go along with like group norms. And so your coworkers might complain to your boss. It seems like you're exempt or you get special treatment and you might, because, you know, again, I'll get to the pros. You can be very valuable. You might be more negative than most at work. That could be part of your thing there. You don't ask for help. I'll tell you that right now. You suck at asking for help or support from other people. Doesn't matter if you need it. Doesn't matter if it's obvious. Doesn't matter if it was assigned to you. Sometimes you, just won't accept it. Can't do it. Can't get some help. I know. I'm feeling you. All right. So why you want an avoidantly attached person on your team? Because you do. Because in the right environment or on the right project, having someone who can work so independently and who's such a self-starter can be a huge advantage because they're not worried about people-pleasing, they can be very quick to act and very efficient when it comes to dealing with problems at work. So, you know, the anxious person might have noticed the issue first and sound the alarm, and the avoidant will be like, oh, we need to do this. We need to do this. Let's go. Because they're not so worried about, you know, oh, I'm going to piss off, you know, Bob from accounting. I always say Bob from accounting. I'm sure there's some accountants out there named Bob. I'm not worried about pissing off Bob from accounting because I don't care. Too bad, Bob. this is the right thing to do. So go do it. Right. This is where you're amazing. If there's a deadline, this is the person who will make sure the job is done. They will draw the boundaries. They will focus. They will be clear with others and what they should or shouldn't be doing. I mean, they are on it. It's pretty great. So I'm trying to think of other ways you want them on your team. I think those are pretty good. You get the idea, though. You get the flavor of this person. And right now, by the way, as you're sitting there, you might be thinking like, oh, I'm kind of mostly securely attached, but I have a little anxious stuff. But boy, Jennifer at work is really avoidant. Now I understand. But again, and Jennifer might drive you nuts. I'd like you to see that Jennifer has good things, right? Just like you do. You know, really learning to accept others for who they are, finding the best parts of them and ourselves is really what, to me, what this podcast is all about. It is not about changing everybody or even labeling yourself or labeling someone else to gossip or anything else. I do all this so that you can feel more in control, feel happier, more clear when it comes to this. That's all. That's my goal every single time. So how to be happier at work and improve your performance if you're avoidantly attached. Did I say all that like I said before? Okay. So here's number one. Ready? You're number one. You're still to be happier and more productive at work. Stop fighting with your supervisor. No, I shouldn't say that. You're not fighting with them necessarily. Stop fighting with what your supervisor wants. How's that? Stop fighting with, you know, I'm sure most of the time you're nodding your head yes, but you're not doing it. You're turning around and go doing what you think you want to do. You are not the smartest person in the room. It's okay. It's okay. It's time to get over yourself. I say with so much love. I can't even tell you. I love you. I love you. Stop it. Stop it. And even if you are the smartest person in the room, well, you must not be if you're working for these people. Okay. That's number one for people who aren't as smart as you. But number two, it doesn't matter. There's all kinds of different kinds of smart. So you need to, at some point, stop railing against the machine, you know, raging against the machine. And you need to say, this is what my supervisor wants. Here's what it is. These are the priorities. I work here. I accept a paycheck. I've signed on. I need to drink a little of the frigging Kool-Aid. That's what I need to do. Doesn't mean you're going to lose yourself. You're not going to become some automaton. No worries. That's, everybody wishes. It's not going to happen. So just stop fighting it. Just listen to what they want and friggin' do it. Just start doing it and see, you'll see that your life will be better. I want you to, so stop. The second thing is, don't automatically dismiss input from your boss or coworkers. You do that a lot too. You just dismiss it kind of out of hand, like right away. Or you give it a second thought of thought without really letting something sink in, asking thoughtful questions, probing. You don't do a lot of that usually. So stop that. Your biggie, I told the anxious person I want them to work on meditation first and foremost. You, I want to work on being more mindful first and foremost. I have to resit in my seat. Here I go. I'm resitting. Okay. Oh, much more comfortable. Okay. I want you to work on being more mindful so you can notice when you're not listening to your boss. So you can notice when you're being dismissive or too focused. The other thing you do is you get so focused on what you want to get done versus what's being tasked to you. And then that's the only time you screw up time management, is because you've put your focus in the wrong place for too long. And then, you know, you have to come over to this other thing, or you think this one part is more important than what your boss is telling you. You're just like not listening well, right? And so I need you to be mindful. And what do I have? Again, the free mindfulness starter kit. Yes, I do. So friggin' download that thing if you haven't. I need, you know, start setting the alarm on your phone for 3 times a day. Really start working on the mindfulness. I will also link in the show notes to the episode I did on this, you know, so you can do that. But please, 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 like, this is the most important thing, or you won't notice that you're having a feeling about something. You won't notice that you're being dismissive. Your brain is just too much on autopilot, and you need to take it off. And the other thing I want you to work on is trusting other people. It's okay to be vulnerable. Trusting others will help you, not hurt you. And lucky you, I did a whole podcast episode on the pillars of trust, which I'll also link to. But work on trust, wherever you see things to work on trust. I have a ton of podcasts about it. Put trust in the search bar of my website. You'll find lots of stuff on trust. If you're on the fearful, avoidant end of the avoidantly attached spectrum, so I see this sometimes. I told you I wasn't going to get into all these subdivisions, but there are avoidants who are very fearful avoidant. And what happens is that they procrastinate like nobody else can do. Anxious people often procrastinate, don't get me wrong, but this is like, this is, you know, the Ivy League of procrastination. And because you're fearful of what, you know, you think that email from your boss, you don't open it for 3 days because you're so afraid you're getting fired. And then when you open it, you realize you were up for an award yesterday that you never went to the meeting about, whatever, you know what I mean? And you just end up really spinning. So if this is you, I really need you to tackle things head on consistently. And if this is you from the anxious, because the anxious people are still listening, if this is you, because they're anxious, they're going to miss something. I want you to do something called Eat the Frog. And again, I'm going to link to this little video where I talk about productivity and how to do this. But eating the frog means, it was originally said by Mark Twain, and Brian Tracy kind of made it famous later. But basically, it is doing the thing that's hardest first, eating the frog first thing. So if you have something like opening that email that you don't want to open, or calling the IRS, you know, in your day, or, you know, whatever, I don't know, whatever it might be. Or calling the dentist to get that toothache taken care of, or whatever your thing is, you want to do that very, very, very first thing in that, which I hope you have about an hour and 45 minutes of just production time in the very beginning of your day. Just do it before you can even think. If you think too much, you won't do it. So do it. I do it when I work out in the morning. I'm eating the frog. I don't think about it. I get up, I work out. I don't ponder. I don't decide to go work out. I've already decided. Because the more you think about these things, the more you're going to avoid them. And we obviously don't want to have that happen. So eat the frog is the last piece I want to say for my avoidance. Okay. Those are all my tips. Those are all the ways this shows up at work. Again, listen to last week's episode if you really want to learn more about attachment styles. I went deep about your personal relationships last week, but I wanted to give you sort of a special little nod here to what happens at work. Okay. If you have a topic you'd like to see covered on the podcast, please, please, please email me at abby@abbymedcalf.com. I really do read the emails. I know it takes me a long time sometimes to respond, but I do read them. And if it makes sense, I will include your question or your situation or your, you know, whatever you're looking for. I'll include it in a future episode of Ask Dr. Abby, which I haven't done one in a little while. So I'm going to get back to some of those. Or any other topic you'd just like to see in general. Many of the topics, as I've said before, come from people writing in. And I want to know what you want help with. I want to be of service. That's what I'm doing here. So if there's something that is really going to be of service to you, then let me know. And if it's, you know, if it's something obviously that's just too specific, I'm likely not going to do it. But if there's a way that I can kind of broaden it and see it as something that would help a lot of people, I will absolutely, absolutely cover it. That's it. If you've listened this long, oh, I love you. Thank you. So sweet. So sweet and kind to listen to the very end. I'm really happy you're here with me. I so appreciate your reviews and your emails and all the things. They just keep me going. They really fill my heart. As always, I feel so lucky and so appreciative to be here with you every week. It means the world to me. You might think I'm helping you, but you are so helping me. I love you. Have an amazing week, and I'll talk to you real soon. Thank you for listening to the Relationships Made Easy podcast with wonderful me, Dr. Abby Medcalf. And I've got two quick things to say. Just give me one more minute. First, I love spending this time with you, and I work hard to make sure every single episode is going to help you move from any feelings of frustration or resentment or anxiety to that connected, hopeful confidence. That's always my goal. So if you have any ideas for a future episode or just want to say hi,
Let me know what the podcast is doing for you. Anything. You can email me at abby@abbymedcalf.com. How simple is that? And the second thing I want to say is if you like the podcast, you're going to go crazy, crazy for my book. My book is really good. I'm really proud of it. You can find it on Amazon or on my website under the shop section on my website at abbymedcalf.com. It's called Be Happily Married, Even If Your Partner Won't Do a Thing. And even if your partner will do a thing, the book will still really help you. So that's it. Thanks again for listening. Talk to you soon.